Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, December 3rd, December already, 2025 on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is downstairs cozying by the fire. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify, and Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, more post-surgical stuff for me. I had talked about last week how I had seen the stem cell folks, and they had talked about how they can give me stem cells and PRP, and it would help me to avoid having to have a knee replacement. And it was very interesting, but above my price range. Well, I talked to a patient today, and she told me she has a friend who did it, and it worked. It worked very well for her. So let's hope at some time I have the wherewithal to get that done, because that would be exciting. And let's hope that I can manage myself so I don't have a knee replacement, so that at some point I will have the availability to get the stem cell, because I'd be very curious to see how it works. Very exciting. So in the meantime, I looked around some more, and I'm interested in red light therapy. So red light therapy is all over the place. It gives deep infrared heating to areas of your body and supposed to stimulate healing. So I looked into it. I'm going to get a device that goes over my knee, and it's far, far less expensive than getting the stem cell treatment. So I'm going to try that and see how it works. And I didn't look into the specifics on how red light therapy works. So what I will do is do some research. And next week, I will talk to you about what red light therapy is all about. And red light therapy can be used for healing. You can get devices that will go on any joint, any part of your body. You can also get red light devices that you can put on your head, and supposedly it'll help you grow hair. So that's interesting too. I'm going to start suggesting that to my patients, because those can be easily purchased and you just wear them for a period of time and either they work or they don't. They don't really have side effects. So why not try it? But I want to look into much more specifically how red light therapy works, as I am interested in it. So I'm going to try that. That's what's going on there. Ron is pretty tired. He came back. He went to see his boy in Chicago and had a great time, but he's exhausted. He's still not caught up on his rest. And so he's teaching his classes and he's also working at the registrar's office. So he's pretty tired. So he's downstairs snuggled in, and that's good. And then we'll have a nice relaxing weekend together. All right. So what's going on in the world of health? One of the things that's going on, you may have heard this, that the FDA removed the black box warning on hormone treatments for menopause. So that's very interesting. So the Food and Drug Administration says it's removing the black box safety warnings from all hormone therapy, creams, pills, and other treatments that are prescribed to ease the symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. The warnings say that the therapies can raise the risk for some cancers, dementia, heart attack, and stroke. And it's now announcing that they're going to stop the fear machine steering women away from the life-saving, even life-changing or life-saving treatment. So the FDA is taking action to remove these black box warnings from estrogen-related products. This is based on a robust review of all the latest scientific evidence. And Marty McCarry, who's the FDA commissioner, said it's time for a change, and that our understanding has changed about hormone replacement therapy, and some women have been denied or never offered hormone replacement therapy, even though there are short and long-term benefits. Instead of black box warnings, the agency wants to see a nuanced explanation of potential risks in a packaging insert, so you get better information in front of women. They'll make estrogen products more accessible to perimenopausal women, and there'll be more of an improvement of life in general. The updated labels will better allow patients and clinicians to engage in a shared decision-making process without an unnecessary barrier to treat menopausal symptoms. The medical organization's official guidance on estrogen therapy hasn't changed because it's been long advised, by its members to talk to patients about their unique risks. The FDA convened an expert panel in July to discuss removing them from at least low-dose vaginal estrogen, and then opened a docket to solicit comments from the public, and received a big response. In its formal comment, the ACOG, which is the American College of Gynecologists, wrote that it's long encouraged the agency to reevaluate warning labels, especially on low-dose estrogen products that are administered vaginally, but considers those separate from systemic estrogen products that deliver the hormone through the body, like pills and patches. So ACOG's doctor said on Monday statement that, like medications, systemic estrogen are not without risk, and their use should be based on individualized conversation between patients and their clinicians. And doctors have gone back and forth about the risks versus benefits of hormone therapy for many years. And in 2002, that's when the Women's Health Initiative study came out and found that hormone therapy was associated with increased risk of cancer and stroke. And since then, additional research has shown the risks were overstated and the therapy can instead reduce heart disease risk when it's prescribed earlier. 50 million women since that study 23 years ago have been denied or never offered or talked about the life-saving changes, benefits of hormone replacement therapy. So doctors are often taught in medical school that menopause is mild and lasts a few years. Ha! But that's wrong. The symptoms occur in over 80% of women, some kind of symptom or other. And so that means that 20 to 25% of women don't have symptoms. I am not one of them. I am a very, extraordinary person in a lot of ways. That is a way in which I am not extraordinary. I did, in fact, have menopausal symptoms. I still will sweat at night sometimes. I'm much better if I sleep cold. Although I'd say that overall hot flashes are not as much of a thing anymore. And those wild fluctuations of hormones that happen at the end of your menstruating years, I don't get those anymore. I mean, I'm 10 years past my last period. So I don't have a lot of symptoms anymore. But I mean, I have the symptoms of joint pain and fatigue and raised cholesterol and, sleep interruption. I have some of those symptoms, but I don't have the acute symptoms where you have the sweats and you have mood changes and all that kind of stuff. That's gone. But the ones that sort of settle in over time, I got some of those. So doctors have pushed to have the black box warnings removed. They say the special panel the FDA convened in July deviated from the usual process for making such changes, lacked the rigor of the usual approach. They appreciate the FDA's panel's interest in reevaluating the label warnings, but this should not be considered an adequate substitute for an advisory committee meeting. That's what ACOG says. And so the FDA advisory committees are made of independent experts who evaluate scientific presentations. So because they didn't have an advisory committee process, that runs counter to the agency's stated goal to increase transparency. So the ACOG urges the FDA to delve deeper into the benefits of low-dose vaginal estrogen for genitourinary symptoms of menopause and systemic estrogen therapy for vasomotor symptoms by convening separate advisory committee meetings, including opportunities for public engagement before making decisions on possible labeling changes. So when we're talking about the vaginal symptoms, women get vaginal dryness and they get a lot of discomfort during intercourse, and they can also get just discomfort from walking around, that if you chafe when you have vaginal dryness, it can be very uncomfortable. And you can also be prone to more vaginal yeast infections, vaginal infections in general. And you can also get more cases of an inflammatory condition called lichen sclerosis. And estrogen can help to prevent those things. The big thing, though, is intercourse becomes untenable because intercourse becomes very uncomfortable. So and then in terms of systemic symptoms, the big symptom is hot flashes. Hot flashes are so uncomfortable, the vasomotor symptoms, that you could be sitting minding your own business and all of a sudden you're sweating from head to toe and dripping wet. And it can happen anytime during the day. And it can happen even when it's not hot out. It's worse if it's hot out. And it can also happen in the middle of the night. You wake up and you can't sleep through the night because you keep waking up sweating. So I still, that's the time when I do get sweats, and I will get them most nights I have at least one sweat. It's not head to toe drenched and it goes away pretty quickly, but I'm still kind of getting those. And so you just tend to, overall, most women run hotter, when they're in menopause. And that not everybody, but most women do. I mean, I had a menopausal woman come into my office. She was not a very large woman, and she was wearing four shirts. It's cold out right now, so you can understand that. I'm finding that I'm kind of cold now too. I have two shirts on right now, but I'm not wearing a sweater. This woman was wearing four shirts, and a couple of them were sweaters. It was impressive. So. And even if you have that going on, you can still get hot flashes. And they're not comfortable, and they're not nice to have in when you're in a social setting, or you're in the middle of doing something, or you're in the middle of being with a client or teaching your class or whatever it is you happen to be doing. So there are several studies in support of the decision to remove this black box warning that hormone therapies reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease, heart attack, and hip fracture. These are not new findings. They were published between 1980 and 96, and there was analysis of 30 studies from 1966 through 03 that showed starting hormone replacement therapy earlier could save lives, and that was published in 2004. So that's very interesting. And so there are women who just don't get offered hormone replacement therapy because since that Women's Health Initiative study, it scared everybody off getting estrogen. I remember my mother was taking Premarin in the late 90s, early 2000s, and her doctor, when the Women's Health Initiative study came out, her doctor took her off it because there was so much fear. So that thinking process is changing. What it means for you, it could change your menopause care. So as we said, they're no longer requiring black box warnings, which is the highest level of medication safety warnings on prescription low-dose estrogen products. Years of research say that the early concerns were wrong or exaggerated and kept many women from getting the treatment that they needed. So the black box warning was there because there was a concern that there were serious life-threatening risks about potential health complications related to heart disease, breast cancer, and dementia. And now they're going to leave it to the pharmaceutical companies to decide how and where to include the information and put it in package inserts instead. So this is in this article, they talk about Heather Hirsch, who was one of 12 physicians who appeared before the FDA panel to advocate for the removal. And she said that it's really fantastic news. It's a signal to retrain doctors, have meaningful discussions, and get more women treated. And she sees it as a very positive step. Many health experts believe now that the broad one-size-fits-all warning should never have been on all estrogen drugs in the first place. There's a concern that they were actually inaccurate, and the black box warning was just one more barrier to get the care for women to get care they need to help manage symptoms. The biggest symptoms: hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal dryness. Notice how those are the big three that people talk about. Beyond that, then there's also cognitive issues. Those are probably the four worst symptoms. It can be really daunting if you're a person who likes to have sex, and most people do. Sex becomes painful, and you disappoint your partner, and you disappoint yourself, and you can't enjoy your pleasure. It's very bad. And hot flashes and night sweats are miserable. That you don't want to get them if you're in the middle of something, and you don't want to have your sleep interrupted if you're sleeping. So in the 90s, a long-term study that was the Women's Health Initiative study was launched, but it was prematurely shut down in 2002 over fears that hormone therapy could cause serious health conditions. And the thinking now is that those findings were misunderstood and flawed. The study tested estrogen on women who were 20 years postmenopausal rather than the younger patients who would actually need the medication in 40s and 50s. And a blanket black box warning was really unfair because the timing of taking these medications matters. If you start HRT earlier, it may reduce your Alzheimer's risk. So the new research shows that the formulation of the estrogen matters. Different dosages and different delivery systems have different effects. So if you use vaginal cream, well, that has 0.01% estrogen used twice a week versus an oral estrogen pill of 0.65 milligrams taken every day. And they took the results of one study of a specific regimen and then put a warning on an entire class of medications. It's very, very different to apply low-dose estrogen to your vagina than it is to take a pill. You're getting a much higher dose of estrogen when you take the pill. When you're applying it topically on the vagina, the dose is much, much lower. And most of it diffuses away. It acts locally on the tissues, and really not much of it gets systemic. If you use estradiol, and estradiol is the form of estrogen that declines as you get into menopause. If you apply estradiol to your tissues, it really doesn't do very much. It acts locally and then it diffuses away. If you use estriol, which is E3, that is the least potent form of estrogen. It works very nicely to help regenerate vaginal tissues. It's not nearly as potent as estriol, but it does work locally to help regenerate tissues. And there's virtually no risk of it getting into your body and going systemic. And so if you are concerned because you have a history of reproductive cancer, people in Europe, they use estrogen even with women who have had reproductive cancers. And if you use it topically on the vagina, it really doesn't go systemic, especially if you use estriol. And even estradiol, it really doesn't go very far systemically. I remember years ago, I don't even remember what it was, before the pandemic, my professor talked to the CNPA conference virtually, and my professor, Tori Hudson, who's probably the premier gynecological naturopath in the world, she said that there's really no evidence that you have an increased risk of hormonal cancer when you use topical estradiol or estriol for vaginal comfort and vaginal health. And remember, it's not just about comfort during sex. It's also to prevent the inflammatory condition like lichen sclerosis. And it's also to prevent you from getting urinary tract infections and vaginal yeast infections. If you use estrogen on your vulva, you're less likely to have those things happen. And those become a real problem because the tissues regenerate and you don't have as well working an immune system in your vulva when you are in menopause. And so when you use a little bit of topical estrogen, whether it's estradiol or estriol, you can help to prevent that. So the thinking is that the black box warnings hurt more women than they protective, that women suffered because of the inaccurate use of this box warning. Without estrogen therapy, there's a massive uptick in antidepressant prescriptions, and women turn to using hormone pellets churned out by non-FDA approved compounding pharmacies. So that's interesting. So this article is against the compounding pharmacies. I don't feel like I'm against the compounding pharmacies. So the black box warning can't be overstated. There were 20 years of postmenopausal women who have been deprived of estrogen as potential benefits. So, and then there's also bone loss. Remember that one of the reasons you get osteopenia and osteoporosis, loss of bone density as you get older, is because of reduced estrogen. So there's been a massive increase in bone fractures, which can lead to death because you fracture your hip, you can fall, and it can be catastrophic. And women have been feeling well, and they've been denied the treatment that they need. So, and she makes, this doctor makes a comparison to thyroid medication. What if we left women untreated? The thing with, see, estrogen is a much more dynamic hormone. I don't know if I agree with this, because estrogen is a much more dynamic hormone. If your thyroid stops making thyroid hormone, you need to take thyroid medicine, because that's immediately life-threatening. If your TSH skyrockets to 14, you can't walk around like that. There are things you can do if your estrogen is low, and also, so I'll talk about this in a minute, but when you measure estrogen in the blood, you're taking a snapshot, and taking blood levels of estrogen doesn't really give you the real picture, because you're making estrogen in many tissues in your body, and you don't see all the estrogen in serum. So it's not, I mean, my patients ask me all the time, can you test my blood levels of estrogen? And if they're low, that doesn't mean they have no estrogen in their body, because it can be in your tissues. Anyway, so the FDA is lifting its box warnings on low-dose estrogen products that come in various forms, like creams, patches, and pills. And they are local and systemic. So ultra-low-dose local estrogen medications are applied to your vagina as cream and have always been overwhelmingly safe. They really don't enter the bloodstream or pose a risk of blood clots. It doesn't travel systemically through the body, and it's even safe for cancer survivors. Vaginal or local estrogen is categorically safe for all women. This is what they say. Any postmenopausal women can still use local vaginal estrogen, And as I said, it's used to treat genitourinary symptoms as well. And systemic estrogen can be delivered through pills or patches, and the box warning should be off those too. So one estrogen risk that you should know about, that there's a black box warning for one issue only on estrogen. There is still a risk of uterine cancer. The risk is associated with using systemic estrogen only products without combining them with progesterone, since the body requires a balance of both. That's also known as unopposed estrogen. And I believe that if you're going to take estrogen, I don't think it's necessary if you're doing just the topical vaginally, but if you're using a patch or you're using pills, doesn't matter if you have a uterus or not, you need to take progesterone too, and you need to take natural progesterone, not synthetic progestin. So patients tend to do really well with hormone replacement therapy. And estrogen is safe for most, but you should still talk to your doctor. I'm not sure what I would do if I had breast cancer, if I actually had breast cancer or had a risk of breast cancer. I'm in that 6 month waiting period. I'm waiting to have a 6 month follow-up from a lesion that they're telling me is not suspicious, but they just want to check it again. But I don't feel real good about using estrogen products right now. So I'm going to wait until I get that follow-up mammogram and ultrasound before I try to use anything. I know they say it's okay to use topically, but I'm going to wait to do that. You should still consult your doctor, and it depends on your individual risks. So do you absolutely have to take hormone replacement therapy? The answer is no, you don't. And also, some women find that for vaginal dryness, they find that if they use topical hyaluronic acid, that works very nicely. And so hyaluronic acid is something you can get. Hyaluronic acid in suppositories and gel and salves, and you can apply it to your vulva. And hyaluronic acid is non-hormonal. It's a substance that your body makes, but hyaluronic acid is in all kinds of products that you put on topically, whether it's mostly for your skin, and you can also take hyaluronic acid orally, and some of it will make its way to your joints. You can also get hyaluronic acid injections for arthritis. I'm going to actually look into that for my knees. And the hyaluronic acid is this lovely thing that your body makes, and it is what we call a humectant. A humectant is a substance that draws moisture to it. So if you draw moisture to your joints will tend to work better. If you put hyaluronic acid on your skin, it's a component of your skin anyway. But if you put more on, your skin's going to be softer. And see, I have this lovely, nice skin, even though I'm almost 62 years old. Well, actually, if you're listening to this on December 3rd, I am 62 years old. So anyway, so it draws moisture to it. So your skin creams, many of your skin lotions, especially for your face, have hyaluronic acid in it. And you can get hyaluronic acid salves that are for your vulva, and they will draw moisture to your vulva. So you can try that if you're not keen on using something hormonal. There's lots of natural alternatives to HRT. I will tell you that Susan Weed, who's a renowned herbalist, she is not a fan of the removal of the black box warning, and she believes that nobody needs to take hormone replacement therapy. And she thinks that there are things you can do that, as long as you're getting exercise, you're eating healthfully, you're eating a variety of foods, and she's really big on her nourishing herbal infusions. And when she says nourishing herbal infusions, she thinks you should drink a quart of nourishing herbal infusion every day. And each cup should have an ounce of herb in it. And you can either do a bunch of different herbs every day, or you can just rotate through a bunch of herbs. And her favorite herbs to do as nourishing herbal infusions for menopause are nettles, linden, oat straw, comfrey, and red clover. And all of those herbs have some phytoestrogen activity. So that means that they have compounds in them that have something of a shape that's like estrogen, and they will stimulate estrogen receptors, and not in a harmful way. Nobody's going to get cancer from drinking nettle tea. So I'm going to try to do that. I have some nettle. In the house right now, I have nettle and linden and oat straw. So I'm going to pick up some red clover and comfrey if I can find it. People are afraid of comfrey because there was a study a few years back that found that somebody overdid comfrey and got liver damage from it. But comfrey, by and large, is not harmful. If you use comfrey leaf especially, and you can, or I'm not sure if she uses leaf or root, but that was also overstated. Talk about a black box warning. The dangers of comfrey was absolutely overstated. It is a very nourishing herb, has allantoin in it, which is something that's necessary for rebuilding healthy cells. And so it's one of the things she recommends as a nourishing herbal infusion. And the way you're supposed to make the nourishing herbal infusion is you're supposed to drink a quart a day, and each cup of that quart is going to have an ounce of herb in it, which is going to be about a teaspoon. And and as I said, you can mix and match any of the herbs that I stated, or you can, what she does is she rotates. So today she has nettles, tomorrow she has comfrey, when the next day she has red clover, and the next day she has oat straw, and she rotates through them. And so you just make a quart of boiling water. You throw in whatever herbs you're going to use, your 4 ounces of your mix and match or your single herb that you're going to do that day. Cover it up and let it sit for at least 4 hours. You can let it sit for more. When it's been past 4 hours, you can put it in the fridge. If you want to leave it sit overnight, you can do that. And then you just make sure you get in a quart every day. And she, if you're like, how am I going to get a quart of that much liquid in? The way you do it is you don't drink plain water. So that's her deal. She's not a big, you've heard me say this before, she's not into plain water. And I like to drink plain water, but I want to see if I can do this. And I would think that the only way I'm going to get down a quart of tea is by not drinking plain water. And there's something to that, because when you drink plain water, you can dilute what's going on in your body. And when you have herbs in the water, then the herbs are going to be more balanced. So if you have all those herbs, nettles, oat straw, and comfrey and linden and red clover, they all have lovely minerals in them. So they're going to be adding electrolytes to the water. You're going to get a little bit of sodium, a lot of potassium, and a lot of other minerals. Nettles, I think of as one of nature's multivitamins, along with alfalfa. I don't know how she doesn't mention alfalfa as one of the choices, but I used to do nettles and alfalfa. And alfalfa, I think, has even more phytoestrogens in it. But if you take those, you're going to get a lot of vitamins and minerals. For hair growth, I like to think about nettles and oat straw and even horsetail. But horsetail is really heavy in the silica, so I don't know if I would do that every day. But nettles is safe to do every day and in quantity, as are those other things. So I may try it, and the next time you see me, you may see me sitting, instead of this nice clear glass of water that you can see on YouTube and Facebook Live, the glass will be filled with something green, or I may be drinking it out of a ball jar, you know, but because the ball jar, the thing with the ball jar, so you have a quart ball jar, you can fill it with the herbal tea, and it can stand up to hot heat. So, I mean, that's what you make you put your jam in the ball jar, and it's a tempered glass, so you can pour boiling water in it. And so you pour that water in over your herbs, you let it sit for at least 4 hours, overnight if you want to, and then you just drink it all down the next day, and then you start over the next day. And apparently if you consume those herbs, they can deal with a lot of your menopausal symptoms, because you'll be very well nourished and you'll have some level of phytoestrogen. You will also get phytoestrogens if you keep your liver clean. And how you keep your liver clean is basically good clean living. Don't eat processed food, don't eat junk, don't eat a lot of sugar. Do eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, clean protein, legumes, healthy protein, whole grains, and just don't eat fake stuff. And your liver will be mostly clean, and you're going to have a lot less symptoms that way, because anything that comes through, your liver is going to be able to process out. So that's one way to do it. So let's see what this article says about natural ways to that are alternatives to hormone replacement therapy. So one of them is caffeine, alcohol, and spicy food. So spicy food can make you have hot flashes. I think if you're eating very spicy food, that may happen. If you're not doing coffee and tea, and you're not overdoing sugar and you like to eat spicy food, you want spicy food to warm you up a little bit. And when you eat it this time of year, you want your ginger and your cayenne because it is warming and that feels good. But spicy food can lead to the feeling of heat rising in your body. But coffee and tea definitely can cause that. And so alcohol can also make hot flashes work. So you want to drink that in moderation. Alcohol has a number of mechanisms by which it does that. It's dehydrating. And alcohol also takes up the use of your B vitamins. And you need B vitamins to metabolize your estrogen and progesterone. So if you drink alcohol, your body prioritizes detoxifying that alcohol. So if you don't have your B vitamins around, your body can't process the estrogens properly. You want to make sure you're consuming adequate calcium and vitamin D because your risk of osteoporosis increases as you get older. Vitamin D helps your body to absorb calcium. So as you've heard me say ad nauseum, I am big on making sure people have adequate calcium in their bodies. I like to see people in the 50s, that is nanograms per milliliter. And if you're not there, I'm going to encourage you to take vitamin D supplements. And you're like, well, why can't I just get it from food? It's hard to get from food. And you can definitely make vitamin D from the sun, but good luck doing that most of the year in Connecticut. If you go outside and you're wearing sunscreen or you're at all covered up, you're not going to make much vitamin D. And from September to March in Connecticut, the sun doesn't get high enough in the sky for you to make adequate vitamin D. So we wind up taking it. And if you're running vitamin D deficient, it can affect your thyroid and your immunity and your bone density and your mood and all kinds of other things. So we want to make sure that you have adequate vitamin D. Use caution. This suggests use caution with soy and other phytoestrogens. And I don't know why it would say that. If you can play it safe and limit your intake of tofu, edamame, and soy milk. I don't know why it would say that, because soy can help with, my understanding is it can help with symptoms. So it says here that soy from 2022, soy isoflavone supplementation can benefit perimenopausal, menopausal women by providing hot flash relief. And then there's another study that caution against it. I'm not sure why. I don't advocate having tons of soy, but I think if you have a little bit of soy in moderation, like if you eat some edamame as snacks, some toasted edamame, or you get steam edamame in some of that and you don't have it every day, or if you have tempeh or a little bit of tofu and it's not like a staple for you, but you have it as part of your diet, I think that's perfectly fine. Unless you are hypothyroid, because because soy isoflavones can block the bonding of thyroid hormone. And I have seen people who have lots of soy isoflavones block the functioning of their thyroid medication. So that is an issue. But if you don't have, if you're not hypothyroid, having a little bit of, unless you're a person who doesn't digest soy well, that's another issue. And that just goes back to, if you eat a food and you don't feel good when you eat the food, don't eat the food. Doesn't mean you have to figure out a way to eat the food because that food is healthy. If you get sick when you eat a food, food's not for you. Doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if it's broccoli. If you get sick every time you eat broccoli, don't eat broccoli, please. Okay. Getting regular exercise is helpful to calm menopausal symptoms. You'll get less hot flashes if you get regular exercise. So exercise helps you in a bunch of ways. It reduces your risk of osteoporosis. It improves your sleep quality, and it aids in your weight management. So aerobic exercise, if you run, walk, take a spin class, get on your bicycle, go swimming, dance, any form of cardio. Aerobic exercise can help reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease and improve your cardiovascular health, which is what they're saying, you know, hormone replacement does that too. So when you do cardio exercise, it makes you feel good because you make more endorphins. You probably make more anandamides too. So it makes you feel good. Weight-bearing exercise is good for you too. So that's exercise when you're on your feet, preserve bone mass. It helps promote higher bone density. And so if you're lifting stuff, or if you're doing things like yoga, or you're doing body weight exercises, If you're doing exercises that include plyometrics, so if you're doing tennis or any kind of sport where you're changing directions all the time, which includes dancing, they're all really good for your bone density because you're changing directions all the time. And so you're pulling, the muscles are pulling on the bones in many different directions. So you're going to get benefits from those muscles pulling on bones. When muscles pull on bones, you create a piezoelectric effect, which is a very tiny electrical current that preps the muscle, the bone, for accepting minerals into it. It creates a cationic charge. No, an anionic charge that will cause the bone to absorb cations. So an anion is a negative charged particle, and cations are positively charged. And your calcium, your magnesium, your zinc, your copper, manganese, all the minerals that go into your bones, they are positively charged. They're mostly metals. And so they go into your bones, make your bones nice and strong. So when you pull on the bones, piezoelectric effect. And the best way to do that is by moving your body in all different directions and also picking stuff up. You can pick stuff up. You can also do body weight exercises. So when you're doing a vinyasa in yoga, where you come up, you come down, your feet go back, and then you're holding your body weight up, and then you do your chaturanga. And then you do your cobra, and you go back into downward facing dog. You're holding your body up. When you're in warrior 1, 2, 3, whichever one you're doing, you're holding your body up with resistance, and that's going to help build bone density as well. Dance is good for that. Tai Chi is good for that. Martial arts is good for that. Any sport where you're changing directions a lot. Also, if you walk, you'll get more benefit from a sort of walk where you have to pay attention to your balance. So if you walk on trails and in the woods, when you're walking over roots and rocks and on uneven ground, that's going to be better for your bone density than if you're walking straight on a flat surface. Although flat surface will work too, because you're still having resistance against that surface. So strength training, like free weights and exercise bands and resistance bands. So anything you use, any apparatus that you use, whether it's a machine, weight, actual, you know, body, hand weights like dumbbells and barbells and medicine balls and bands, they are all going to help you increase your muscle mass. So resistance training also helps to reduce anxiety, as does cardio exercise. And then flexibility training, anything that you do to be more flexible. So that's going to be any kind of stretching, Pilates, Tai Chi, bands that you use to stretch. You can use straps to help you stress. And then here's a shock. Stress management can help you with your menopause symptoms, because after all, the hot flashes are a vasomotor symptom, and vasomotor symptoms have to do with the autonomic nervous system. So if you have an increase in fight or flight hormones, you're going to have more hot flashes. So when you are calmer, you have less hot flashes. In fact, if you're in the middle of a hot flash and you do some deep breathing, you may be able to get yourself out of the hot flash. So mindfulness meditation can be helpful. So that's going to be any meditative practice at all. So that's meditation where you're just being mindful and doing deep breathing. If you want to do Vipassana, you can do that. If you want to do yoga nidra, which is where you're in a still position and doing deep breathing while somebody guides you through progressive relaxation, where if you're sitting still in nature or doing a mindful walk in nature, that works too. Just being in nature helps you with mindfulness and can help to reduce. So trees can help to reduce your menopausal symptoms. So then there's cognitive behavioral therapy that can help you reframe your negative thought patterns into something more positive. And there was a double-blind randomized control that's 50 women who did CBT had reduced symptoms, especially the vasomotor and psychological symptoms of menopause. And that CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, can help reduce the frequency of your hot flashes. So other lifestyle changes can be helpful. You want to keep your space cool and ventilated. So the thing is, I'm having less hot flashes now because it's chilly in the house. Would I have more if it were hot out? I probably would. I definitely sleep better if it's cooler. And that's one of the things we talk about with sleep hygiene, that you want to make sure that your room is adequately cool and dark. And, you know, if you're carrying a fan or wearing cooler clothes, I don't know that you're actually reducing your hot flashes. You're reducing it because you're not allowing yourself to get as hot, because you're going to be more likely to get hot if it's already hot in the room. But are you reducing your tendency? I don't know that you're reducing your tendency. It's just that if the room is cooler, it's less likely to happen. But still, you know, my sister doesn't wear long sleeves anymore. She just can't because she's just too hot. And wear looser clothing. Same thing. You're not necessarily reducing the propensity, but if you have the propensity and you wear looser clothing, you're less likely to have the sweats. You just want to make yourself comfortable. And making yourself comfortable is a good thing when you're in perimenopause and also for the rest of your life. We talked about using the vaginal moisturizer for general dryness. And remember what I said is that if it has the ingredient hyaluronic acid, that's something that's non-hormonal and it just draws moisture to it if you want to use something that's not hormonal. Hyaluronic acid can work. You can also get lubricants that have aloe in them. I don't necessarily want to recommend using aloe straight from the plant because it hasn't been processed to be sterile. Not that you have that things have to be sterile, because your vagina is not sterile. There's probiotics and there's microorganisms in your vagina. But you may not want to put aloe that hasn't been intended for use directly on your vulva. But you can get products that are lubricants, vaginal lubricants and daily refreshers that contain aloe that you can, because aloe is basically a humectant as well. It has allantoin, and that's part of how allantoin works. Allantoin helps with cell regeneration and has some humectant properties as well. It can ease itching and irritation, make your sex more comfortable. Use lube for sexual activity. Use early and often. And I wonder how patients feel. They come in, I don't know if I should talk about this with you or if you can help, but what do you recommend for vaginal lubricant? And I'm like, you came to the right place. I don't mind talking about it. And we have solutions for that. So I tell them about the hyaluronic acid and I tell them to use lube early and often. Shout out to both Dr. Ruth and Sue Johansson, who's the Canadian Dr. Ruth. May they both rest in peace. But they would talk about using lots of lube. That I think it was Sue Johansson who said that you basically, when you are having sexual activity, you have about 7 minutes of your own lubrication, and then you, anybody, it doesn't matter what age you are, it's harder to make a lot of lubrication. So use it. Don't be shy. Use plenty of it. Your partner's not going to care. Your partner will be enthusiastic. It just makes sex more fun. It's fine. So don't be embarrassed to use it. And don't think you're inadequate if you don't make enough of your own lubrication. There's no such thing as not enough, because everybody has their limit. And so if you use lubrication to make things work better, that's encouraged. Anything to make your sex happier and nicer and more fun. Yay. Okay. And the lubricants, I recommend not using chemical lubricants, although if that's all you have, that's all you have. You can get lubricants that have silicone in them, but it concerns me about what those chemicals might do to your body. Again, you can get lube that's intended for sexual activity, and the main ingredient is, guess what? Aloe. And aloe is very good for your skin. Here's a shocker. Smoking is going to make you have more menopausal symptoms. Duh. Because when you smoke cigarettes, it affects your fluctuating hormone levels. It causes oxidative damage. It's taxing to your liver. Your liver is not as available to have a check on your hormones. Really not good for you to smoke. This should come as a surprise, right? So if you can quit smoking, the sooner you quit smoking, the better off you're going to be. And you're certainly going to have more vasomotor symptoms if you do that. And smoking is even worse for you for your menopause if you are also obese. So if you're smoking, try to get into a smoking cessation program or find a way to quit smoking. There are nutrients that are helpful, very helpful for menopause. You want to make sure you have adequate B vitamins because they help your body produce new cells. And vitamin B6 especially is helpful for metabolizing your estrogens. So it can be helpful in maintaining healthier levels of estrogens and help reduce the severity of your hot flashes. So vitamin B6 is the main one that helps to reduce severity. Vitamin E helps your body neutralize oxidative stress. And we used to give high doses of vitamin E, and high doses of vitamin E could kick down hot flashes. Right now, when I talk about vitamin E, I like to talk about using tocotrienol. So you shouldn't use just D-alpha-tocopherol, and you shouldn't use DL-alpha-tocopherol at all because it has synthetic vitamin E in it. And if you use plain vitamin E that's D-alpha or DL-alpha-tocopherol without tocotrienols, you actually increase your risk of oxidative stress. So you want to have something that has tocotrienols in it. So look for that on the label if you're going to take vitamin E. Vitamin D, we talked about this already. Get your vitamin D level checked. Get your practitioner to check your vitamin D level. I like to see it at least in the 50s. It can be even a little bit higher than that. And what I do with my patients is I test their level and I test it periodically. And I have them, I tweak their dose so I get it to the level that I want to see it at. And people differ in their ability to absorb vitamin D. And if you take a high dose of vitamin D and you're still not getting your dose very high, then you want to add vitamin K2. And when I take K2 with my vitamin D level goes up higher. So people genetically have various predispositions as to how well they absorb their vitamin D. And I think I have the gene that I don't absorb it so great, but I can counteract it by also taking vitamin K2. And vitamin K2 is good for you anyway because it helps to prevent atherosclerosis. It helps with your bone density. It helps with a lot of other things too. So I take my D and my K2. Omega-3 fatty acids, surprise. They can help promote the help with vasomotor symptoms. I take nearly a tablespoon of fish oil every day. And so you can eat fish, eat your smash fish. So your smash fish are your not fish that are smashed, although you can smash them if you wish. You can smash your fish if you wish. Oy vey. All right. So smash fish. So thank you to Susan Weed for teaching me what smash fish was. I didn't know what that was. I don't think she made it up, but it's a really good acronym. And smash fish are, it's not smash fish. It's salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. And what those fish have in common is that they are high in omega-3 fatty acids and low in mercury. So you can eat smash fish regularly. Not everybody eats fish every single day of the week, which is when I suggest taking fish oil. So we don't have fish every single day of the week, but I do take fish oil every day of the week. And I also eat fish some days of the week. And I do enjoy the smash fish. I think that I like the only one I'm not big on is the mackerel. But Ron can't stand anchovies. I love to put anchovies in my salad. I love salmon, especially if it's smoked. And sardines I will eat. I don't eat them a lot. Again, I think because I'm upsetting Ron because he didn't grow up eating stinky fish. I'm Jewish and we grew up loving smoked fish because, you know, you got herring and you got whitefish and you got lox. And so that was a treat to have at brunch, you know, especially break the fast at Yom Kippur, but just on Saturday, Sunday brunch, you would have smoked fish. Smoked fish was a delicacy. And so I grew up from a very young age eating that stuff. Ron did not. So there's herbals and herbal supplements. Black cohosh is helpful for vasomotor symptoms. I used to give it out a lot. It's not necessarily the first thing I give anymore. St. John's wort is also helpful. It can help with hot flashes, mood, and menopausal symptoms. Dong Quai, which is Angelica sinensis, can be helpful. It's not quite clear how much it helps. It might help with night sweats and hot flashes. Then chase berry or chase tree, Vitex annuus cactus, may help with hot flashes. It's also what I think of as a progesteronic. It helps with progesterone metabolism. And it's competing. So I don't give chase berry. If somebody's also taking natural progesterone, I don't give chase berry because if you want to try something that's non-hormonal, you can try chase berry if you want to increase your progesteronic activity because it's probably one of the best progesteronic herbs. So it can help to mimic progesterone in your body and also metabolize progesterone more readily. And there are some women who, you know, they have PMS and they have irregular periods and they have menopausal symptoms and they take chase berry, makes them feel a lot better. Then there's maca, which can help relieve hot flashes and interrupted sleep. Maca is an interesting an interesting plant. It is, I think they think of it as Incan potato, and it, but it's actually a cruciferous vegetable. It's like broccoli and stuff. Then there's red clover, one of the herbs that Susan Weed recommends that you drink as tea. And red clover has genistein and diazin in it. Has isoflavones in it. So that's part of how it works. Sage is helpful. Can help reduce the frequency of hot flashes. The only thing with sage, I feel like sage is drying, and I wonder if sage could make you more dry. Sage is an anti-galactagogue. You give sage to women who you want them to stop. To stop lactating, if they're weaning their child, you can give sage tea to help to calm that down. Sage is also helpful for helping you to absorb your vitamin D. So you could try it and see how it works, because it can reduce hot flashes. Then there's milk thistle. Also can work on help the frequency of milk of hot flashes, because it helps to enhance the function of your liver. So you make more liver cells, it helps to regulate your blood sugar, and your liver just functions more efficiently when you have it. So it's going to manage the levels of hormones you have in your body. Valerian root and hops, they put that together. They're two utterly separate herbs. Hops have phytoestrogens in them, and they are calming. They're also nerving, so they're calming and can help with sleep. And valerian is helpful for hot flashes. It was studied to be better than a placebo. The thing with valerian is some people have a paradoxical effect of valerian. Some people get wired on valerian, and some people it absolutely knocks them out. I'm nervous to use valerian because I'm sensitive to things that knock you out. So because I can't take ashwagandha, I can maybe take GABA. I'm hard pressed to take taurine. I can't even take too much L-theanine. But I can take a little bit, and I have to be careful with those things because they make you sleepy, but they do help you to sleep better. So you're going to stay asleep more. You're going to be less likely to have the hot flashes. Evening primrose oil I take every day, and it's made from evening primrose, and it's helpful for reducing hot flashes. Some the studies vary, but I think it helps me with that. And then ginseng, this is the Panax ginseng. That's, ginseng, like Chinese ginseng, and so it has glycoproteins associated with improved sleep, and it's also energizing. I tend not to use Panax ginseng in people who are already hyped up or anxious, because I think it's energizing. I tend to use either Panax King Folius or Eleuthero, and Eleuthero is more of a leveling herb. Eleuthero used to be called Siberian ginseng, because it has some similar properties, but it is, it's not ginseng. It's known as Eleuthero. And so I prefer to use that. I have Eleuthero. I haven't been taking it lately. And then there's licorice. Licorice also has phytoestrogens in it, and it is energizing. Licorice, if you use licorice that has not had the glycyrrhizin taken out of it, it can raise your blood pressure. So only use it if your blood pressure tends to be normal or low. If you tend to have high blood pressure, licorice is not for you unless it has been deglycerizinated. And I had a patient who came in who I had told to take deglycerizinated licorice, and they went to their doctor, and the doctor thought they had high blood pressure and said, don't take the licorice. And I had to explain to the patient, look, it's deglycerizinated exactly because the glycyrrhizin makes your blood pressure go up. The part that makes the blood pressure go up is gone. And your doctor doesn't understand that. I'm sorry. She shouldn't have told you that. So this is something that happens. But licorice is something. I remember we had a women's formula that Dr. Hudson had put together, and licorice was one of the elements in it. But we had to be careful with women who had high blood pressure. But there's plenty of, as you can see, there's loads of herbs you can take that don't raise your blood pressure that can be helpful for hot flashes and other symptoms. I think I'm pretty good for menopausal symptoms, and I do take a number of things that can help. I'm taking the essential fatty acids, the omega-3s. I'm taking evening primrose oil. I'm taking annatto-tocotrienols. I'm not actually taking black cohosh. I'm taking motherwort as well. They don't mention motherwort here. Motherwort is a lovely herb to take when you're perimenopausal. It is both a nervine and a cardiotonic, and I take the mother wort because I tend to get palpitations. And when I'm taking 2 droppers twice a day right now of the tincture, and I think it's working very well. It helps to keep me calmer. If I get flustered or I have more palpitations during the day, I'll take more. But I will go through phases where I have some palpitations, where I have some PACs, and they come and go. And I think they are worse, shockingly, when I've had too much caffeine, too much stress, I'm dehydrated, don't have enough electrolytes, I'm anxious, upset, and, you know, then I have periods of time where I'm just fine. So I think the motherwort is a good balancer, and I resonate with it well. And big shout out to Amy, my office manager and friend, who every year she collects motherwort from Tobacco Road Farms, and she makes me tincture, and I appreciate that so much. So I'm still going through last year's batch of motherwort tincture, and I think she's going to bring me some more, which is very exciting. So thanks to that. So those are your natural alternatives to hormone replacement therapy. Well, we only have a couple minutes to go. I have more stuff I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you next week about red light therapy. I want to talk to you about hydration and dementia. And I'm going to talk to you about, there's a couple other things I'm going to talk to you about. But if you have things you want to talk to me about, please write me at radionaturopath@gmail.com and we can get your questions up on the air and I'll be happy to answer them. You can also be asking me questions while you're listening to Facebook Live. And if you put them on the Facebook Live after I'm off the air, I will probably see them and I'll be able to answer them. But it's probably better to write me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. All right. So I think we're good for today. I'm going to let you go, and then I have some nice topics here, like why naps are good for you and why going to bed early is good for you, which I'm going to try to do tonight. Okay, so let's see. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storchendi, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storchendi. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.